Luke's instincts told him that there was a good chance Jessica Wheeler's problems would get worse before they got better. Hobie had insisted on taking the first shift on guard duty the night before. Luke had relieved him after several hours, sitting in a straight-back chair outside the door of Jessica's room. He had stood watch too many times in his life, going all the way back to the war, to allow himself to go to sleep on duty. But he was tired the next morning, and had to stifle a yawn as he knocked on the door of Hobie's room a little before dawn. Hobie looked sleepy, too, when he answered the door in a pair of long underwear.
Any problems?
No, everything was quiet. I thought you might want to go across the street to the cafe and get some breakfast and coffee for Miss Wheeler.
That idea perked Hobie up.
I'll do that. Should I bring some for us, too?
Luke handed $3 silver to the young man.
Good idea. And that ought to cover the bill.
Hobie didn't waste any time. He dressed quickly and fetched the food and a pot of coffee. He held the big tray from the cafe while Luke rapped on Jessica's door. Edna Langston answered the knock. She had a wary look on her face, but relaxed when she saw Luke and Hobie.
How's Miss Wheeler?
She was a bit restless, but she slept. She's awake now, waiting for the doctor to come by.
We brought some breakfast.
I see that.
Mrs. Langston turned away from the door.
Do you think you could eat, dear?
Actually, I'm famished.
Mrs. Langston stepped back and ushered the two men into the room. Jessica was sitting up in bed with pillows propped behind her, wearing a dressing gown. She was still a little pale, but Luke thought she looked considerably less shaken.
I'll leave the three of you to enjoy your breakfast. I'm sure, being older, that you'll be a proper chaperone, Mr. Jensen.
Luke wanted to point out that he wasn't exactly ancient, but he thought it would be smarter to just agree.
Of course, Mrs. Langston. Thank you for your help.
The older woman patted Jessica on the shoulder.
I was glad to do what I could. You take care of yourself, dear. And if we don't see you again, I wish you all the best.
You'll see me again. I'm going to be on that stagecoach when it leaves.
Luke wasn't so sure about that, but he didn't see any point in arguing with her about it before the doctor had even been there. They ate the breakfast of flapjacks, fried eggs, and thick slices of ham, washed down with cups of hot coffee. That made Luke feel considerably more human after the long night and not enough sleep.
I've been thinking about what you asked me last night, Mr. Jensen.
You mean about trusting us enough to tell us why those men are after you?
Luke ignored the warning frown that Hobie gave him.
That's right.
She directed a cool, level look at Luke.
And you were right. They were trying to get their hands on me. Those men who attacked the stage, I mean, not just the ones last night. They work for a man named Milton Dietrich.
The name meant absolutely nothing to Luke. He glanced over at Hobie. The young man shook his head.
I'm not surprised that neither of you have ever heard of him. He's a wealthy, powerful man, with interests in railroads and shipping and Lord knows what else. But he likes to conduct his business behind the scenes, I suppose you'd say. He lives in Boston. That's where I'm from as well. My father, well, he used to do business with Dietrich before he died.
I wasn't aware that your father passed on. I'm sorry.
There was no way you could know about my father or any of the rest of it. But my mother died when I was a little girl. After my father was gone, I didn't have any relatives in Boston. I have an older brother who lives in California, though. He's actually my only relative that I know of.
That's unusual. Most people have large families.
I know. I would have loved to have had a large family. If I did, Dietrich might not have decided that he could just announce out of the blue that he and I were to be married.
Married? How old's this fella anyway?
At least twice my age. But it's not uncommon for men of his years to marry much younger women, especially successful men.
Maybe not, but I can understand why you weren't all that enthusiastic about the match, especially if it was all Dietrich's idea.
Oh, it was, I assure you. As I said, my father had done business with him. He built ships for Dietrich's line, so Dietrich had been to our house. Well, I've known him for years. Evidently, he's had his eye on me for quite some time.
Why, that randy old goat! Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Wheeler.
You can call me Jessica. As much as you've both done for me already, well, even though we haven't known each other for 24 hours yet, you've earned the right.
So Dietrich decides the two of you are going to get married, and you don't agree. That prompted you to leave Boston and head for California to live with that brother you mentioned.
Well, that's right. But how did you know?
It's not very hard to figure out. Then, when Dietrich realized what you'd done, he sent those men to find you and bring you back to him.
Yes, that's exactly what he did. He's so arrogant, he thinks he can do whatever he pleases. And if anyone defies him, he'll just crush them and take what he wants.
In this case, you.
Yes.
Well, by God, we have to put a stop to this. Why didn't you go to the law? It's illegal to make people do something they don't want to do.
Dietrich doesn't just have hired gunmen working for him. He has a small army of lawyers, too, along with plenty of judges and other officials who are in his pocket. He'd just make it sound like he was trying to help the daughter of an old friend and business associate, and didn't have any ulterior motives. He'd paint me as unstable and claim that my grief over my father's death had driven me mad.
She looked back and forth between Luke and Hobie.
I honestly don't think he would hesitate to have me placed in an asylum or something until I agreed to go along with what he wants.
We've got to figure out some way to stop him.
Jessica reached over and put a hand on his arm as he sat in a chair beside the bed.
I can't allow you to get mixed up in my troubles any more than you already have. Those men are killers.
Well, they don't know who they're dealing with. Why, Luke here's a famous bounty hunter.
Jessica's eyes widened a little as she looked at Luke.
Is that true?
Never mind about that right now. What makes you think that Dietrich would leave you alone if you reached your brother in California?
Well, he wouldn't have nearly as much influence clear on the other side of the continent. He can't tell judges and lawmen out there what to do. And my brother has been pretty successful himself. Nowhere near the level of Milton Dietrich, of course. But Jacob has a fine ranch and plenty of friends. I think I'd be safe there.
More than likely you would be. But first, you've got to get there.
Jessica's chin jutted out defiantly.
I won't let that horrible man stop me. I'll find a way to get there. I will.
Darn right you will. And we'll be right there.
The knock stopped him before he could promise anything. In the long run, though, that would help, Luke thought. He knew what was going through Hobie's mind just as well as if it were printed on the young man's face. In the meantime, Luke drew his right-hand Remington as he stepped over to the door.
Dr. Bismarck?
That's right.
Luke opened the door and looked out into the corridor. The doctor was alone. He holstered his revolver.
My patients don't usually meet me with a gun.
I'm not your patient.
He stepped aside to let the doctor come into the room.
If you two gentlemen would give us some privacy.
We'll be right outside the door.
When they were out in the hall and the door was closed, Luke crossed his arms and leaned against the wall.
You were about to tell her we'd take her out to California, weren't you?
Well, somebody needs to. With a bunch of hired killers after her, you don't think she can make it there alone, do you?
Actually, I'm rather surprised that she's made it this far. Boston is a long way off.
So if we don't help her, who will?
I don't know, but if we don't track down Gunner Kelly and Dog Eater and get the bank's money back, who will?
That's just money.
A necessary evil in this world.
But it's not important compared to a young woman's life, is it?
That depends who you're asking, I suppose.
I'm asking you, Luke.
Well, let's wait and see what the doctor says.
Hobie looked like he wasn't satisfied by that answer, but he didn't argue anymore. They stood there, waiting in tense silence until the door opened and Dr. Bismarck stepped out into the hallway.
Miss Wheeler appears to be in remarkably good condition for someone who fell down a flight of stairs 12 hours ago. She has some bruises and sore muscles, and I'd feel better about that knock on the head if she was agreeable to spending the next few days resting in bed. But she's determined to resume her journey, and medically, I can't really forbid it.
So she can travel on the stagecoach?
Yes. However, I think she should be examined again by a competent physician at the next available opportunity.
There'll be doctors in the other towns along the coach's route. Did you tell her she could travel?
I did. I suspect she's already packing and getting dressed. She wanted me to tell you to be sure and not let the stagecoach leave without her.
Luke glanced at Hobie.
Thanks, doctor. I guess we'll take it from here.
A pleased grin spread across the young man's face. A few minutes later, Luke and Hobie walked up to the stagecoach station carrying their rifles and saddlebags. They had checked out of the hotel. The stagecoach sat in front of the barn where a couple of hostlers were finishing up the job of hitching a fresh team of horses to it. The new Singletree was in place. Jim Pierce walked around the coach inspecting everything, the way a careful Jehu did before setting off on a run. He raised a hand in greeting to Luke and Hobie.
I was hoping I'd see you fellas again before we left this morning.
You'll see more of us than that. With Ben Wallace laid up, who's going to be your shotgun guard?
Oh, well, we don't have one. There's a relief guard waiting at Moss City just across the border in Arizona. But until we get there, I reckon I'll be driver and guard both.
Not necessarily. I've got a guard for you.
Who might that be?
Luke turned and leveled a finger at a startled Hobie McCullough. Hobie was a little surprised, but once he realized what Luke had in mind, he was enthusiastic about the idea. The station manager wasn't so sure, though. He frowned.
I don't know how the company would feel about me hiring you for the job, young man.
You don't have to hire me. Luke and I are headed in that direction anyway. I'll just tie my horse on at the back of the stage and ride with Mr. Pierce. You don't have to pay me anything.
Hobie's argument convinced the station manager.
I ain't expecting any more trouble, but you never know. It'll be good to have you boys riding with us for the next leg of the trip.
Luke and Hobie had promised Jessica they wouldn't reveal her secret. She hadn't done anything wrong, of course, but still didn't want people to know she was being pursued by an older man who had been lusting after her for years. Knowing what he did, Luke felt a little bad about not warning Pierce of the very good chance there would be more trouble. The stagecoach would continue on its way regardless, so Luke figured he and Hobie were doing what they could to help it get through to Moss City. Jessica and the Langstons walked down to the station from the hotel a short time later. Luke and Hobie had saddled their horses, and Hobie's mount was tied at the back of the coach.
Where's that gambler, Kemp?
Reckon he's staying here in Harkerville. His ticket was only good this far, and I ain't seen him since we got in last night. He probably spent the night in some saloon playing cards, and he'll sleep away the day.
Luke, that means there's room for you to ride in the coach if you want to.
No, I'll be scouting our route.
The passengers climbed into the coach and settled down for the journey, and Hobie was right there to give Jessica a hand getting in.
If you need anything, I'll be up top. You just give a holler.
Luke swung into the saddle as Hobie joined Jim Pierce on the driver's seat and picked up the shotgun that was lying on the floorboard at his feet. They soon left Harkerville behind as the coach rolled on toward the border between New Mexico Territory and Arizona. Luke hadn't had a chance to ask around the settlement about Kelly and Dog Eater, but he was confident they were headed in the right direction. Anyway, the outlaws probably would have avoided the town unless they needed supplies or planned to rob the bank. They would have been more likely to stop at one of the way stations along the stagecoach line to water their horses or buy a meal. Luke ranged ahead of the coach by as much as half a mile at times, and he dropped back a similar distance now and then to check their back trail. He didn't see any signs of trouble, but he knew better than to think those hard cases hired by Milton Dietrich would give up. It was only a matter of time until they struck again. The coach stopped at an isolated way station at midday to change horses and let the passengers stretch their legs, as well as have a meal of beans and stew. While they were there, Luke spoke with the man in charge of the station.
Have you seen two men come through here in the past week or so, leading several extra horses?
The man, who was wiry and wizened with age and had a bush of gray hair that stuck straight up from his scalp, tilted his head and frowned.
Yeah? You talking about a white man and an Injun, mister?
Luke felt his pulse quicken slightly.
That's right. The Injun is an Apache.
Oh, yeah, I seen him all right. Let them water their horses. But something about him wasn't right, and it wasn't just that the one fellow was Apache, either. Those red devils make everybody in this part of the country uneasy. But I tell you, that white man spooked me just as much or more than the Injun. I stood in the door with my rifle in my hands the whole time they were there, and I was mighty relieved when they rode off.
How long ago was this?
Oh, 3 days, I think. They sort of run together out here. I'm pretty sure it was 3 days ago.
Luke and Hobie had cut into their lead somehow. Kelly and Dog Eater must have been just ambling along, Luke thought, supremely confident that no one was on their trail.
I don't suppose you heard them say anything while they were here about where they were going, did you?
The way station manager squinted.
Well, come to think of it, I did hear the white hombre say something that sort of puzzled me, but wasn't about where they were headed. He mentioned somebody called Don Del Oro.
Gift of gold. I wonder what that was all about.
Well, maybe it was somebody's name. All I know is I wouldn't want to have those two looking for me. That Don fella better have eyes in the back of his head if those two are after him. They were pure poison.
Luke couldn't argue with that. The passengers climbed into the stagecoach, and it rolled on. Luke knew from talking to Jim Pierce that it would stop for the night at another way station, then move on in the morning, crossing the Arizona border and arriving at Moss City around the middle of the day. Luke rode alongside the coach.
Jim, have you ever heard of somebody or something called Don Del Oro?
Pierce thought about the question for a long moment, then shook his head.
Well, can't say as I have. A lot of the fellas who own big ranches down in Mexico are called Dons, and maybe it's one of them.
Luke supposed that was possible. For some reason, the phrase didn't really sound to him like a man's title and name, though.
What's that about, Luke?
I was talking to the fella back at the way station. Kelly and Dog Eater were there 3 days ago. They said something about Don Del Oro while they were watering their horses.
Those are the bank robbing varmints you're after?
That's right. I was hoping to pick up a clue to their destination. I don't know if Don Del Oro is it, but I'll have to keep it in mind.
Hobie didn't say anything else. He was torn between wanting to continue on the quest that had brought him that far and his desire to help Jessica Wheeler safely reach her brother's ranch in California. Luke suspected Hobie's infatuation with Jessica would win that battle. That was fine. He had set out after Kelly and Dog Eater alone, and was perfectly willing to continue going after them alone. The afternoon passed without any trouble. The sun wasn't far above the western horizon when the next way station appeared up ahead. The adobe building was a dark, squat shape in the sea of reddish-gold light washing over the landscape. Luke rode ahead of the stagecoach and reached the station a few hundred yards ahead of it. As he reined in, two men came out of the building.
That's the stage from Harkerville coming up behind you?
That's right.
Who are you, mister?
Outrider. Actually, I'm just traveling along with the stage as far as Moss City, so I thought I might as well do a little scouting.
Run into any trouble?
Not so far.
Luke looked around the station. There was no barn, but behind the building he saw a big corral where the fresh teams were kept. Something struck him as odd about several of the horses, though. Their sides were flecked with drying sweat, as if they had been put in the corral recently after a hard run. But before he could ponder that thought, the stagecoach rattled up and Pierce hauled back on the lines to bring the team to a stop.
Oh!
The cloud of dust kicked up by the team's hooves and the wheels swirled around the vehicle for a few seconds before the breeze began to carry it away.
Howdy, fellas. Where's old Banty Sinclair?
He took sick. The company sent us out to take his place.
Pierce frowned.
Well, that's odd. I would have figured those two boys of his could handle everything.
That brief exchange, on top of the drying sweat he'd noticed on several of the horses in the corral, suddenly came together in Luke's mind to form a picture, and he didn't like what he was seeing. His right hand reached for a gun as his left pulled his horse's reins and sent the animal lunging between the stagecoach and the station.
Jim, get that coach out of here!
The shutters on the station's windows flew open and gun flame lanced from inside the building. Luke returned the fire and kept his horse dancing and wheeling so he'd be a harder target to hit.
Hi-yah!
From the driver's seat, Hobie's shotgun returned fire as Pierce lashed the team with the reins. The coach lurched into motion again. The two men who had come out of the station jerked guns from under their shirts and triggered the weapons at Luke. He felt the hot breath of one slug as it whipped past his head. The Remington in his hand blasted. As Luke downed one of the men with a bullet through the body, he sent the horse pounding straight at the other one. The man didn't have time to get off another shot. The horse's shoulder rammed into him and knocked him down. The animal's steel-shod hooves slashed at him. Luke twisted in the saddle and sent two more slugs sizzling through an open window in the station. That emptied the Remington. He rammed the revolver back in its holster and kicked the horse into a gallop after the stagecoach. More dust boiled up from the rapidly turning wheels. Luke looked back and saw two men run out of the station holding rifles. They fired after him and the coach, but the fading light made accurate shooting difficult. Luke leaned forward to make himself a smaller target just in case the rifleman got lucky enough to come close. He thought back to the horses he had noticed in the corral. He was pretty sure only four of them had been flecked with sweat, meaning only four bushwhackers had been lurking at the station, waiting for the stagecoach to arrive. Luke had shot one of them and trampled another under his horse's hooves. The two throwing lead after the stagecoach were the only ones left. He didn't think those two were likely to give chase now that they had lost the element of surprise. Their trap had failed. Luke raced to catch up to the stagecoach. As far as he could tell, Hobie and Pierce were all right. The Jehu didn't seem to be hurt as he kept the team moving at top speed. The horses couldn't keep that up for much longer, though. Luke drew even with the coach. From his position facing the rear and kneeling on the seat so he could fire back over the roof, Hobie called to him.
I don't see them coming after us.
I don't think they will. But keep an eye on our back trail anyway, Hobie.
Hobie waved a hand to signal that he understood.
Better stop and let those horses blow, Jim.
Pierce nodded and hauled back harder on the reins. The team slowed to a walk and then stopped. One of the coach doors opened, and Stephen Langston popped out of the vehicle with a pistol in his hand.
What happened back there? My God, are we going to be plagued with outlaws for the entire journey?
Luke knew the men at the way station weren't outlaws. They were more of Milton Dietrich's hired hard cases. He wasn't going to reveal Jessica's secret, though. It wasn't his place to do so. He didn't have to. Jessica looked out the coach window.
Well, this is all my fault, Mr. Langston. All the trouble that's been following us is because of me.
I don't hardly see how that's possible, dear.
Jessica and Edna stepped out of the stagecoach.
Those men who attacked us both times, the ones who tried to kidnap me back in Harkerville, all work for a man named Milton Dietrich. He's got his mind made up that he's going to marry me, even if he has to force me into it.
What?
Good Lord, that's outrageous.
I know, but it's true. The two of you have been so nice to me. I just couldn't keep the truth from you any longer. You've been in danger, again, because of me.
Langston shook his head.
It's not your fault, Miss Wheeler. You're a victim of this man's evil intentions. Did you and Mr. McCullough know about this, Mr. Jensen?
Miss Wheeler explained the whole thing to us this morning.
Don't look at me. This is the first time hearing about it. How'd you know they was laying for us back there at the way station, Luke?
The first clue was the sweat drying on some of the horses I saw in the corral at the station. There were four of them, and they looked like they'd been unsaddled and put in there pretty recently. I knew they couldn't be part of a stagecoach team, because this run is the only one going through right now. Then, when you asked about the fella who runs the station...
Banty Sinclair, an old friend of mine. He got stuck with the nickname Banty because he's so small. Got two big strapping sons who help him at the station, though.
When you mentioned them, I knew something was wrong. And the most likely thing was that Dietrich's men had taken over the station and set up an ambush for us. I'm sorry. I think there's a good chance your friend and his sons are dead. Dietrich's gunmen may have shot them.
Could be they're just tied up.
That's possible. I can go back and check. It'll be dark soon, so if any of Dietrich's bunch is still there, they won't be able to see me coming. I think it's more likely they lit a shuck out of there, though, when they weren't able to grab Miss Wheeler.
I feel like those men's blood is on my hands.
No. Mr. Langston is right. None of this is your fault. Lay the blame where it belongs. Right at the feet of Milton Dietrich.
The question was what to do next. They couldn't be sure Dietrich's surviving men had abandoned the way station. And there was the possibility that more hired hard cases had shown up following the shootout.
Jim, it's getting dark and those horses look played out. What are our chances of making it to Moss City?
I reckon I could follow the trail in the dark if I had to, but them horses would be dead before we got there, even taking it slow and easy.
Do you know of any place not far from here where we could hole up for the night? Some place that can be defended?
Pierce rubbed his bearded jaw and frowned in thought for a moment.
Maybe. I seem to recollect a little box canyon not far from here. The mouth of it is narrow enough that a few men with rifles could hold it.
Can you find it in the dark?
I think so. But I gotta warn you, like I said, it's a box canyon. We can keep those varmints from getting in, but if they want to, they can keep us from getting out.
If you have a better idea, I'm wide open to hearing it.
Well, That's just it. I don't.
Luke turned to the three passengers.
What do you folks think? You've got a stake in this, too.
If Mr. Pierce thinks we can put up a fight in that canyon, then that's where we should go. I may be a businessman now, but when I came to Arizona, it was about as untamed a place as you've ever seen. I've smelled my share of powder smoke.
Stephen, you're a little old to be talking so fierce.
I'm not that old. The only one I'm worried about is you, my dear. I wish I hadn't taken you with me on that business trip to Albuquerque.
I'll be fine.
Hobie turned to Jessica.
What about you, Miss Wheeler? What do you think we should do?
The smartest thing for all of you to do would be to leave me right here by the side of the road and drive on. Some of Dietrich's men are bound to come along and find me sooner or later. That way you'd all be safe, because they wouldn't have a reason to go after you anymore.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. We've killed four of them and wounded several more. With men like that, it hurts their pride when somebody gets the better of them. Not only that, it hurts their reputation. If they don't settle the score with Hobie and me, they might not be as likely to get the job the next time somebody needs some gun work done.
You're saying that they're going to have a grudge against you no matter what?
That's right.
Well then, I suppose we should find a place where we can fight if we have to.
I feel the same way. If you can get us to that canyon, Mr. Pierce, we'll spend the night there.
We're all agreed then. Climb back in, folks, and we'll get going.
A minute later, with Hobie on the seat beside him and the passengers back inside the coach, Pierce started the team moving. They traveled at a slow pace. The horses were tired, night had fallen, and it was more difficult to see where they were going. Half an hour later, the Jehu brought the team to a halt and pointed to a cliff visible in the moonlight about a quarter mile away. A black slash in the upthrust rock face marked the location of the canyon.
Place ain't got a name, as far as I know. It runs back into that cliff for about a half a mile.
It looks a bit ominous. I'd better reconnoiter first.
I'll come with you.
No, you stay here with the coach, just in case there's any trouble while I'm gone. I shouldn't be long.
Please be careful, Mr. Jensen.
The chances of any of Dietrich's men being in there is pretty small. I'm more worried about a cougar or some wild animal like that.
If you run into trouble, fire three shots into the air. I'll be ready to jump on my horse and come running.
Luke trotted his horse toward the canyon mouth. As he neared it, he pulled the Winchester from its sheath and laid it across the saddle in front of him. Dressed all in black like he was, he would blend into the darkness, making him harder to hit if anybody tried to take a shot at him. It was one reason he'd always chosen such somber garb. His horse walked into the canyon without hesitation. Luke rode slowly. The canyon floor was rocky in places and sandy in others. The thudding hoofbeats echoed back from the sheer walls on both sides. Anyone who had a problem with small, enclosed spaces wouldn't like this, Luke mused. The canyon was only about 50 yards wide, and its walls rose at least 200 feet. Those walls came together and closed off the far end of the canyon after about half a mile. The cliff they formed loomed ahead of Luke, black as sin in the faint light that filtered into the canyon. As far as he'd been able to tell, the place was completely deserted, except for maybe a few lizards and rats. He turned his horse and rode back out. When he emerged from the canyon, he found the five people with the stagecoach waiting anxiously for him.
Everything looks all right. Take the coach on in, Jim.
Whew.
Pierce picked up the reins. He flapped them against the backs of the team and got the horses moving.
Hobie, there's some piles of rocks in there. I think you can build a fire among one of them so that it can't be seen from outside the canyon. That's important. We don't want to announce where we are.
That makes sense. But why can't you build the fire, Luke?
Because I'm going back to that way station. I want to check on the three men that was supposed to be running it.
I planned on borrowing a horse and doing that myself.
I think it'd be better if you stayed here. If you have to make a run for it, you can handle that team better than any of the rest of us could.
Banty and his boys could be hurt and needing help.
I know. That's why I'm going. I should be back before morning. I'll sing out before I come in. Don't shoot me.
I won't get trigger happy.
Luke turned his horse.
I'll be back.
He rode away from the canyon and headed toward the way station. Luke had kept a close eye on their route while Pierce led them to the canyon, so he'd be able to backtrack and find the way station. He steered by the stars, stopping fairly often to listen for the sound of hoofbeats floating on the night air. Any group of riders likely represented trouble for him and his companions, so he wanted to steer clear of them. He didn't hear anything except the occasional call of a night bird. Eventually, the way station came in sight. Luke saw it as a deeper patch of darkness in the night. No lights were burning anywhere around it. As he rode up, he didn't see any bodies lying in front of the building. Dietrich's gunnies must have pulled out and taken the two dead men with them. Either that, or they were holed up inside the station, waiting to bushwhack anyone who showed up. Luke dismounted and took his rifle with him as he cautiously circled the station. It continued to look deserted. After a while, he approached the open door at an angle. Pausing just outside the door, he held the rifle ready and sniffed the air. He smelled a faint tang of gun smoke coming from inside the station, left over from the earlier ambush. He lowered the rifle, leaned it against the wall, and drew both Remingtons instead. With the revolvers in his hands, he went through the door fast, crouching low as he entered the building. He was ready to return the fire if any muzzle flames spurted at him from the darkness. The room remained silent. Slowly he straightened and took another deep breath. A mixture of smells filled the air. The gun smoke he had noticed a moment earlier, human sweat, horses, and something even more ominous. Luke recognized the coppery scent of blood. He holstered his left-hand gun and reached into his shirt pocket for a match. He fished out one and snapped it to life with his thumbnail. His eyes narrowed against the glare as the match flared up. The light revealed exactly what he'd been afraid he would see. Three bodies were piled against the far wall of the station's main room. They lay limp and unmoving. Luke had seen enough dead men to know what he was looking at. To be sure, he moved closer and worked the toe of his boot under the shoulders of the nearest man who lay face down. Luke rolled him onto his back. Wide, sightless eyes that didn't flinch from the match's glare stared up at him. They were in the weathered face of a balding, middle-aged man whose cheeks were covered with silvery beard stubble. He had been of fairly small stature in life. Luke knew he was looking at the body of Banty Sinclair. The other two men were just as dead. They were young, in their 20s, and despite their much greater size, bore a distinct family resemblance to Sinclair. Luke would have guessed that they were the man's sons even if Pierce hadn't mentioned that fact. All three had been shot numerous times at close range. Luke didn't like the idea of leaving the bodies unattended, but it would take him all night to dig three graves, and he wanted to get back to the canyon where he had left Hobie, Jessica, and the others. He would tell the station master at Moss City what had happened, and he could send someone out to tend to the horses and bring back the bodies of Sinclair and his sons. Luke hunted up some blankets and used them to wrap the bodies. When he left, he made sure the door and the shutters were closed to keep scavengers out. For now, that was all he could do for the dead men. He rode away, wishing that when he and Hobie had first encountered Dietrich's men attacking the stagecoach, they had taken advantage of the opportunity to kill a few. Luke certainly wouldn't hesitate to send more of them to hell in the future. They had it coming. The moon was just about to set by the time he neared the canyon again. He could see the black slash in the cliff face that marked its location. In another minute or two, he would be close enough to call out to Hobie. Suddenly, a burst of gunfire ripped out, muzzle flame blooming in the darkness of the canyon's mouth. Luke's first impulse was to gallop straight ahead, right into the thick of the fracas. His natural caution made him suppress that urge. He hurriedly drew rein and tried to figure out what was going on. Maybe Hobie, Pierce, and Langston had heard him coming and gotten nervous, despite being warned not to get trigger happy. The shots weren't being directed at him, though, Luke realized a moment later as more guns opened up from outside the canyon. Men were shooting toward the dark slash in the cliff. It was pretty easy to come up with an explanation for why they were doing that. Dietrich's men had found the hiding place and were attacking again, attempting to root out the defenders. If they didn't know he was out there, away from the canyon, he could make a difference. Luke sat still on his horse, hiding in the darkness.
Hold your fire! By God, hold your fire!
Something about the voice struck Luke as odd. After a moment, he realized the words had a broad, flat intonation to them, marking the speaker as being from Boston. That thought flashed through his mind as he recalled Jessica saying that she was from Boston, as was Milton Dietrich. He wondered if Dietrich had come all the way out to New Mexico territory in pursuit of the woman he intended to marry. Whoever had yelled the order to stop shooting got results. The attackers' guns fell silent first, and then the shots from the canyon's defenders trailed off. Luke stayed where he was, listening.
Jessica! Jessica, darling, can you hear me?
Several long seconds ticked past, and Luke began to wonder if she was going to answer.
Go away, Mr. Dietrich! I'm not going to marry you. I'll never marry you, no matter what you do.
That confirmed Luke's hunch about the man's identity. Dietrich hadn't been content to send his hired killers after Jessica. He had come west himself to ramrod the effort to find her.
Jessica, thank God you're alive. I was deathly afraid that something had happened to you.
It hasn't. No thanks to you. I've nearly been killed by your men several times.
You have my abject apologies. My men were overzealous in their effort to find you. But that's all over now that we have a chance to talk to each other again. I'm sure we can work out our problems smoothly.
The problem is that I'm not going to marry you, and that you're insane.
If that accusation bothered Dietrich, his calm, carefully controlled voice didn't show any sign of it.
My dear, I just want to help you.
I know what you want. My poor father was barely in his grave when you came slobbering after me like a dog after a bone. You're a horrible, horrible man.
Oh, that's not true. Your father was an old friend of mine. Before he passed away, I promised him that I'd see to it you were taken care of. He was worried about what might happen to you after he was gone.
Reckon he had good reason to be worried, you old lecher. If he knew what kind of low-down snake you are.
Dietrich didn't say anything for a moment.
Is that ill-mannered young frontiersman your new suitor, Jessica? Can he give you all the things I can? I've offered you a fine, comfortable life with me back home in Boston. What sort of life can you have out here in this drab, godforsaken wilderness?
I'll be free! I'll be free!
More shots roared from the canyon. Luke figured those shots were Hobie losing his temper and blazing away at Dietrich and the hired gunman. Pierce and Langston joined in. Luke saw multiple muzzle flashes winking like fireflies in the dark mouth of the canyon.
Hold your fire! Everyone stay down! They'll run out of ammunition eventually.
That was true. Hobie had quite a few rounds for his rifle and pistol, but they wouldn't last forever. Langston probably didn't have more than a dozen or so extra cartridges for his pistol. Luke didn't know how much extra ammunition Pierce had for his revolver and shotgun, but not enough to hold off the attackers indefinitely. Luke didn't know whether there was any water to be had in that canyon either. A small water barrel stood in the boot on the back of the coach, and Hobie had a couple of canteens on his saddle. But once the sun came up, the heat would come with it, and that water wouldn't be enough to last more than a day. The long-term prospects for defending the canyon didn't look good, Luke thought. A siege would end badly for the defenders. But they had one advantage. Luke was behind Dietrich's men, and evidently they didn't know he was back there. He swung down from the saddle and reached for his rifle, then stopped with his hand resting on the smooth wood of the stock. He didn't know how many men Dietrich had or where they all were. If he opened fire on them, he would take them by surprise and no doubt would account for a few of them. But doing so would reveal his presence, and the element of surprise would last only a few seconds. Once it was gone, he would be outnumbered and outgunned. The challenge called for a stealthier response, he realized. He left the rifle in the saddle boot and let the horse's reins dangle. Well trained, the animal wouldn't stray very far, ground hitched like that. Leaving his revolvers in their holsters, he moved warily on foot toward the area where he had seen the flash of rifles from Dietrich's men. While the shooting was still going on, he had tried to pin down the location of as many gunmen as he could. He had memorized those spots, another habit his years of experience had taught him, so he headed for the nearest one. When he judged he was getting pretty close, he dropped to hands and knees and crawled forward. At the sound of the cough, no more than 10 feet in front of him, Luke froze. His keen eyes scanned the darkness ahead of him. After a moment, he made out an irregular shape that had to be the hired killer. The man was stretched out behind a small hummock of earth that served as cover for him during the assault on the canyon. It didn't offer any protection from the deadly danger coming up behind him, though. He seemed completely unaware of that as Luke closed in on him, inch by inch. The blade of Luke's knife made only the faintest whisper of steel on leather as the bounty hunter drew it from his sheath. As far as he could tell, none of the other gunmen were close by. He lunged forward and landed with his knee in the small of the man's back, pinning him to the ground.
What the...
His left hand clamped over the man's mouth, stifling any outcry as the blade in his other hand plunged forward. The 8 inches of cold steel drove into the hired killer's back, rasping across a rib and penetrating his heart. Luke hung on tight as the man's body bucked in its death spasm. After seeing how mercilessly Dietrich's hard cases had gunned down Banty Sinclair and his sons back at the way station, Luke wasn't going to lose any sleep about killing any of them. He waited until he was sure the hombre was dead, then withdrew his knife and wiped it on the back of the corpse's shirt. The scent of tobacco smoke drifted to his nose, coming from somewhere to his right. Luke started crawling again, following the smell. A couple of minutes later, he spotted a tiny orange glow of a Quirly's tip as the smoker drew in on it. The distance to the canyon mouth was too great for any of the defenders to see that glow and aim at it. It served as a beacon for Luke, though, as he closed in on the man kneeling in a little hollow. Luke attacked, his left arm looping around the enemy's neck, forcing his head up and back and drawing his throat taut. Pressure on the man's jaw kept him from crying out as Luke brought the knife across his throat in a deep slash that cut almost all the way to the spine. Blood gushed out onto the sand, a black fountain in the starlight. The dying man's struggles lasted only a couple of seconds before he went limp. Luke lowered the body to the ground. He didn't bother cleaning the knife this time. Dietrich had been quiet for a while. He tried again.
My dear, think about the people who are with you. If you've befriended them at all, you don't want anything to happen to them, do you? Surely you understand that if this keeps up, someone could get badly hurt.
Like the people you've already killed?
My orders were that no one should be harmed. But bad things happen sometimes. You should understand that.
I do. The day I first laid eyes on you was a very bad thing. I just didn't know it yet.
You damned little tease. You always enjoyed making me want you. You may have thought I didn't know what you were doing, but I knew. And now you have to pay the piper.
By that time, Luke was close enough to tell Dietrich's voice was coming from a cluster of boulders about 50 yards to his right. If he could get into those rocks and capture Dietrich, it might end the fight. Without Dietrich to pay them, the hired killers might be less likely to continue risking their lives. Luke began working his way carefully toward the boulders. It was doubtful that Dietrich would be alone. The man from Boston would have at least one of the gun wolves with him. Luke wouldn't be able to take them without raising a ruckus. But if he got his hands on Dietrich, that wouldn't matter. With the man who had hired them as a hostage, the gun wolves would have to let those in the stagecoach go. Luke slipped across the ground, keeping to the shadows cast by scrubby mesquite bushes and using shallow gullies to conceal himself. Luke hadn't seen any horses so far, and the reason for that became apparent as he closed in on the boulders where Dietrich was holed up. He heard several whinnies and the stamping of hooves as the mounts shifted around among the big slabs and chunks of rock. The gunmen had brought their horses into cover to keep them safe from any stray slugs. At least one of the hired killers, and maybe one or two others, would be posted with Dietrich to tend to the horses. The businessman could have as few as 5 or 6 men left overall, Luke realized. In a deadly struggle, it was always smart to expect the worst. A man who did that was seldom taken by surprise. Disappointed, maybe, but not surprised. Luke paused at the outer edge of the boulders and listened intently. In addition to the small sounds coming from the horses, he heard voices muttering.
Build a fire, party. There's no reason for us to sit here shivering all night. Put some coffee on to boil, too.
I'm not sure that's a good idea, boss. Even if they can't see the flames from where they are in that canyon, they'll see the glow and know we're here. It'll give them something to aim at.
Build the fire anyway. I'm already chilled to the bone, and it'll be even colder by morning.
Luke stayed where he was, motionless in deep shadow next to one of the boulders, while he listened to the hired gun build the fire as Dietrich had ordered. He heard the man moving around, heard the rasp of a match, and a moment later caught the faint crackle of flames and smelled wood smoke. After a few more minutes went by, the scent of coffee brewing was added to the mix. He drew one of the Remingtons and began slipping around the boulders, staying in the shadows and working his way closer to the fire. Luke came to a huge slab of rock that rose at a slant. It was steep, but not so steep that he couldn't climb it. He holstered the gun and started the ascent, leaning far forward to rest both hands against the rock. The surface was rough enough to provide handholds and footholds. As he began to climb, he hoped the noises coming from the restless horses would cover up any small sounds he made. When Luke reached the crest of the rock about 15 feet off the ground, he took off his hat. He went to his belly and edged forward so he could look over the edge. The rock dropped off sheer. Dietrich's hired gun had built the fire against its base. By the flickering light of the flames, Luke saw three men standing near the fire. He had heard only two voices, so he knew one of the gun wolves had to be the taciturn sort. He didn't have any trouble figuring out which one was Milton Dietrich. The man from Boston wore a gray suit and a Homburg hat. He was a little below medium height and of average build. His hair was steely gray, and his face had a slightly pinched look about it, as if he were used to disapproving of just about everything. He was about as ordinary-looking a gent as Luke had ever seen, and yet his evil was far from ordinary. Dietrich was responsible for the deaths of at least three innocent people, as well as for terrorizing a young woman and endangering a number of other folks. One of the men filled a tin cup with coffee and handed it to Dietrich. The Easterner swallowed a sip of the brew and grimaced, but he took another sip. Whether it tasted good or not, coffee would have a bracing effect on the cool night.
Hardy, we have to talk about what's going to happen once we have Miss Wheeler in our custody. I don't want anyone coming after us or trying to set the law on us.
That's what I figured, boss.
The man who had handed Dietrich the cup was a stocky hombre with a ragged black mustache. He wore a black hat and a cowhide vest.
Don't worry, we'll take care of cleaning up.
I'll promise her that if she surrenders, the others won't be harmed. But I think we both know what needs to happen in the long run.
We don't want to leave any witnesses behind, that's for sure. They know we killed those fellas back at the way station.
It's very important that nothing happens until Miss Wheeler and I are gone. I still have hopes of winning her affections, so she needs to believe that I kept my word and her new friends weren't hurt.
We'll handle it. You can tell her we'll just hold them prisoner here until y'all are gone, and then we'll let them go.
But as soon as we're well out of earshot...
No need to spell it out, boss. We'll bury the bodies all the way up in that canyon where nobody's likely to find the graves for a long time. Maybe never.
Luke's anger grew as he listened to them callously plotting a slaughter. From his vantage point, he could see the horses and knew there wasn't anyone with them. He figured the third man by the fire was responsible for them. Luke had to take care of two men, three if he counted Dietrich, but he didn't figure the older man represented much of a threat. He drew both guns, knowing he would have to shoot swift and sure to bring down both hard cases. Once that was done, he could drop down and take Dietrich prisoner. Before he could make his move, a harsh voice yelled from behind him.
Look out, boys! There's one of them up there on the rock!
As Luke twisted on instinct, a bullet spanged off the slab beside him. The second slug whistled past Luke's ear. He aimed at the muzzle flash and triggered twice. A howl of pain split the night, telling him that at least one of the shots had scored. He would be a good target as long as he was up there on top of the boulder, so he got down the quickest way he knew how. He rolled over, came up in a crouch, and leaped off the rock, aiming at the camp below. Pardee and the other hard cases had their guns out, but they didn't know exactly where Luke was and certainly didn't expect him to come diving out of the night sky at them. As professional gunmen, though, their reactions were quick. Each man got off a shot as Luke plummeted toward them. Neither bullet came close to him. Chance aimed Luke's dive at the second man. He landed feet first, his boot heels smashing into the man's chest and driving him to the ground. Ribs snapped under the impact. Luke's momentum carried him forward in a roll as he hit the ground. He came up on one knee, twisting toward Pardee as the man fired again. The slug whipped over Luke's left shoulder and past his ear. Both Remingtons spewed flame as he fired. The pair of .36 caliber slugs pounded into Pardee's chest and drove him backward in a jittering dance. He lost his balance and fell into the fire, landing on his back and causing an explosion of sparks in the air around him. His clothes and hair started to burn, but he was too weakened by his wounds to escape the flames. Luke bounded to his feet and lunged toward Milton Dietrich, who stood there with the coffee cup still in his hand, looking stunned and dumbfounded by the sudden violent turn of events. Too late, he dropped the cup and tried to turn and run. Luke's left-hand gun came crashing down on his head, denting the fancy hat and sending Dietrich stumbling to his knees. Luke holstered that Remington, reached down and grabbed the collar of Dietrich's coat and hauled the man to his feet again. He pressed the barrel of the other revolver against Dietrich's back.
It wouldn't take a hell of a lot to convince me to blow your guts out, Dietrich. So you better listen and listen good.
Don't kill me, please, don't kill me.
Like most men drunk on their own power and arrogance and accustomed to riding roughshod over anyone who opposed them, once his own life was threatened, Dietrich turned into a pathetic, mewling coward. Luke turned him toward the fire, where Pardee still whimpered and thrashed around weakly. The stomach-turning smell of burning flesh filled the air. Pardee's moans faded away.
I ought to throw you in the fire with him. It's just what you deserve.
No, no, I'll pay you. I swear to God, I'll give you anything you want.
Shut up!
Luke heard footsteps pounding quickly toward them and knew the rest of the gunnies were coming to see what all the shooting and yelling was about.
Tell your men to back off, now!
Stop! Stop where you are. Don't come any closer. Don't come any closer. This madman will kill me.
Damn right I will.
He prodded the gun barrel harder into Dietrich's back.
You know how a revolver like this works, Mr. Dietrich. I've already tripped the trigger. My thumb on the hammer is all that's keeping it from firing. It would behoove you to keep that from happening.
You sound like an educated man. Surely we can come to some sort of agreement, work out an arrangement.
I like money as much as the next fella, Dietrich. But I wouldn't touch any of yours. It's too dirty even for me.
Luke hauled him toward the edge of the cluster of boulders.
Now, you and I are gonna walk over to that canyon. And if your men get any bright ideas about shooting me, this gun will go off when I let go of the hammer and you'll die too. So what do you think you should tell them?
Hold your fire! Whatever you do, for God's sake, don't shoot!
Although Dietrich had given that order, the skin on the back of Luke's neck crawled as he stepped out of the cover of the boulders and forced Dietrich ahead of him. Even with just starlight to aim by, those gunmen were probably good enough shots to ventilate him. He hoped they would follow the orders of the man paying them and hold their fire. No shot sounded as Luke strode out into the open. He knew the animal would respond to his whistle. Sure enough, the horse trotted up out of the darkness a moment later and gave Luke a friendly nudge on the shoulder with his nose. Luke kept a tight grip on Dietrich's collar as the man stumbled along in front of him. The horse walked along easily behind them. The open ground between them and the canyon mouth seemed 100 miles wide rather than a few hundred yards. When he was about 50 yards away, Luke stopped.
Hobie! Hey, Hobie, can you hear me?
Luke? That you?
Yeah! So hold your fire! I've got Dietrich with me!
My God, you've taken him prisoner?
I have a gun in his back. He's ordered his men not to shoot. We're coming in!
You're never gonna get away with this. I'll see to it that you're hunted down and killed. I don't care how long it takes, you're a dead man.
Talk like that makes me think I ought to go ahead and let this hammer drop. Is that what you want, Dietrich?
If you're as intelligent as you seem, that's exactly what you'll do. Do you really want a man like me as your enemy?
They say you can judge a man by the sort of enemies he makes. If that's true, I'm pretty well satisfied to be on the opposite side from you, mister.
Dietrich didn't say anything else as they covered the rest of the distance to the canyon. They stepped into the thick shadows at its mouth.
Over here, Luke!
Luke followed the voice to some rocks along the canyon wall. The stagecoach was parked behind them, and the embers of the small fire glowed beyond the coach. By the faint light they cast, Luke saw the vague shapes of Hobie, Jessica, Pierce, and the Langstons as the defenders gathered around them.
I was hoping I'd never have to see you again.
You'll regret this. All of you will. I'm not accustomed to such treatment.
You're not used to being on the receiving end of it. You sure can't dish out the misery, though.
What'd you find back at the way station, Luke?
I'm sorry, Jim. We were right about what happened there. Your friend and his boys are dead.
Son of a bitch.
Pierce lifted his shotgun.
This hombre here is the one responsible for what happened. Even if he never pulled a trigger. Step away from him.
No. You just can't kill me in cold blood.
That's what your men did to poor old Banty and his sons. Hell, a double load of buckshot better than you deserve. It'll kill you quick, and what you really got coming is a slow, painful death.
Dietrich's head jerked around toward Luke.
You can't just allow this lunatic to shoot
me! I'd mind my tongue if I was you.
I hate to say it, Jim, but right now Dietrich is worth more to us alive. The Jehu slowly lowered the scattergun.
Reckon I know that. But if I had my druthers, his insides be scattered all over this canyon by now.
Maybe you'll get your chance later. I guess it all depends on whether Dietrich's men want to let us out of here in the morning. It was only a few hours until dawn. No one had slept much, but Luke figured it would be safe enough for them to take turns grabbing a few winks while Dietrich was their prisoner. Luke tied Dietrich's hands behind his back.
He only has three or four of those hard cases left. The odds are as close to even as they've ever been since this trouble started.
Are you willing to bet your life on that? For all you know, I have more men working for me than you've seen so far.
Luke knew that was true, but he wasn't going to admit it to Dietrich. Instead, he set the man down on the ground with his back against one of the stagecoach wheels.
I'll take my chances.
So will I. You're beat, mister. You just don't know it yet.
Dietrich glared up at him. He seemed to have a special hatred for the young man. He had seen the protective way Hobie stayed so close to Jessica. Even in bad light, anybody with half an eye could tell how Hobie felt about her. Luke thought those feelings were beginning to be returned, judging by the way Jessica stood close to Hobie, smiled at him, and rested a hand on his arm from time to time while they were talking. Taking advantage of the opportunity to get a little rest, he sat down with his back against a rock, stretched his legs out in front of him, and tipped his black hat down over his eyes. In a matter of minutes, he had fallen into a light doze. Nothing disturbed him, though, until the smell of coffee roused him. When he opened his eyes, he saw that the eastern sky was gray with the approach of daylight. Luke stood up and stretched. He looked around and saw that Dietrich had gone to sleep, too. The man's head hung forward over his chest as he snored. A few yards away, Jim Pierce sat guarding him with the shotgun ready.
Any problems?
Those buzzards out yonder have been quiet. To tell you the truth, I ain't sure they're even still out there.
I bet a hat they are. They're not going to give up on the job just yet. It wouldn't surprise me if Dietrich promised them a bonus when he got what he wanted. And they'll still try to collect that if they can.
You're probably right. Hombres like that are mighty stubborn when it comes to their money.
Where is everyone else?
Mr. and Mrs. Langston are inside the coach. As far as I'm concerned, the ground is just about as comfortable as them seats. But I reckon folks like them are used to having a roof of some sort over their head when they sleep. Miss Wheeler's over there behind them rocks. Hobie made her a bedroll there so she'd have some privacy. As for the young fella himself, he's taking a passeyar out to the canyon mouth to have a look around.
I hope he's being careful not to show himself.
Luke picked up his rifle.
I wouldn't put it past those men to try sniping at him.
Neither would I. If you want to go get him, I got Arbuckle's boiling. Stuff's a real eye-opener the way I make it.
I'll fetch him.
He walked the 50 yards or so to the canyon mouth, staying close to the wall so he wouldn't present much of a target in the pre-dawn gloom. He was still trying to spot Hobie as he came close to the opening. He hoped the young man hadn't gone much further than this.
Hobie, right here. Everything quiet out there?
Too dang quiet if you ask me. I think those varmints are up to something.
They might try to sneak up on us, all right. But I think they're more likely to wait until we're out of here to make their move.
We're leaving the canyon?
We can't stay here indefinitely. We don't have enough food, water, and ammunition for a long siege. We're less than half a day's journey from Moss City, so I think we ought to make a run for it.
Taking Dietrich with us as a hostage?
That's right.
They'll try to stop us. If there's any law in Moss City, they can't afford to let us get there, or they'll have murder charges hanging over their heads. They'd probably rather see Dietrich dead than let that happen.
On the other hand, they probably don't have the advantage in numbers anymore. There's a chance they'll decide to cut their losses and light a shuck.
If they do, that'll be just fine with me.
The two men went back to camp. Stephen and Edna Langston were standing beside the fire, and Jessica came out from behind the rocks a few minutes later, carrying the bedroll Hobie had put together for her.
Were you able to get any sleep?
Jessica smiled.
Some. The bedroll was actually pretty comfortable, Hobie.
Oh, you don't have to say that. I know it wasn't.
Well, no, really. I mean it.
Maybe you can spend tonight in an actual bed. I sure wouldn't mind if I did, too. I mean, not the same bed, a different bed, in a different building.
That's all right, Hobie. You don't have to explain.
That's good. My tongue seems to get all tangled up mighty easy these days.
And everyone knew the reason for that, Luke thought with a smile as he bent to pick up the coffee pot. The bleeding edge of the sun had just peeked over the eastern horizon by the time everyone had eaten, and the team was hitched to the stagecoach again. The horses still weren't exactly fresh, but they had rested enough overnight that they could make the rest of the trip to Moss City.
We better hope we don't have to run them too hard, though. I don't know how much they got in them at top speed, a mile or so at most.
Maybe it won't come to that.
Luke swung up into his saddle.
I'll scout ahead a ways. Everyone ready?
It's not too late to make a deal, Jensen. Leave Jessica and me here so my men can pick us up and the rest of you can leave. You won't be harmed, and no one will try to stop you. I give you my word on that.
Your word doesn't mean a damn thing to me, Dietrich. Putting you up there on top of the coach in plain sight, where a stray bullet is just as likely to hit you as any of us, is just about the only value you've got right now.
Dietrich glared at him, but didn't say anything else. Pierce whipped up the team and got them moving. Luke rode ahead of the coach. His eyes scanned the landscape outside the canyon. He didn't see anything out of the ordinary, but that didn't mean much. There were plenty of places where a group of horsemen could hide, ranging from arroyos to small mesas. Luke waved Pierce ahead, and the stagecoach rolled into the open. Pierce kept the horses moving at a brisk pace, although not at an actual run. Luke slid his Winchester from its sheath and rode with the rifle across the saddle in front of him. His eyes never stopped moving as he swept his gaze over the landscape, searching for any sign of impending trouble. Nothing. He spotted some buzzards wheeling around in the pale blue sky in the distance, but that was all. Pierce had left the trail between Harkerville and Moss City to reach the canyon the night before. He drove back to the stagecoach's usual route and swung the vehicle to the west, toward the Arizona border. Hobie turned to look at Dietrich.
Looks like your hired killers don't think highly enough of you to come to your rescue after all.
You want Jessica for yourself, but I can promise you, you'll never have her. Never!
Go to hell.
You'll be there before me!
Luke heard that exchange and didn't care for the confidence he heard in Dietrich's voice. It gave him an uneasy feeling. The man was mighty sure of himself, considering the situation he was in, and that confidence seemed to grow with every turn of the stagecoach's wheels.
They'll be out of New Mexico territory soon. See those hills up ahead? They're across the line in Arizona. Of course, it don't really matter all that much. One flat, dry, dusty stretch of ground is pretty much like any other flat, dry, dusty stretch of ground, I reckon.